Welcome to Syracuse Speaks, a Syracuse Crunch-centric podcast. I'm your host, Alex Ackerman. This is season 6 of Syracuse Speaks. Let's get started. And a very happy November to y'all. It is November 5th. This is the first podcast of the month. It's great to be able to check in and see what we have seen from this rather new look Syracuse Crunch over the past month or so. Things are going well for Syracuse, although they have slipped in the standings since the last time we talked, from first place in the North Division down to fourth place in the North Division. That positioning comes with a couple of asterisks. The main one being that Syracuse actually has several games in hand on the teams in front of them in the standings in the North. Syracuse has currently played 8 games for a record of 5-2-0-1. Not too shabby considering all of the changes behind the bench, all of the changes in the roster. The team is looking really good. And when we say games in hand, what we mean by that is that the teams that are currently ahead in ahead of Syracuse in the North Division have played more games than Syracuse has. So they have had the opportunity to gain some more points than Syracuse because they've played more games. Ahead of the Crunch so far in the standings, in third place is the Toronto Marlies with 9 games played and a record of 5-2-2. Ahead of them is Cleveland with 9 games played, 6-3-0 is their record. And then ahead of all of those teams in first place in the North currently is Rochester, but they've already played 10 games in comparison to Syracuse's 8. Rochester's record is currently 6-2-2. As a reminder, the way that the American Hockey League reports records is a little bit different than the NHL because the AHL separates out shootout losses from overtime losses, even though shootout losses don't get you any more points than an overtime loss does. So it is a little strange that the AHL does that, but whatever. So the way that the records are laid out, it's wins, losses, overtime losses, and shootout losses. So Syracuse's record of 5-2-0-1 means they have won 5 games straight up in just straight up. They've won. They've lost 2 in regulation. They've lost none in overtime, and they've lost 1 in the shootout. That one loss, unfortunately, came this past weekend against Rochester. So that's where Syracuse is so far. And as I said, this team, I think, is gelling a little bit more quickly than many of us, including myself, anticipated, which is really exciting and great to see. And I was thinking about what's going well for Syracuse so far. Like, what are the reasons why the team just seems to be sharper? They seem to be faster. They seem to be connecting more. And obviously, right up top, you have to look at the change in coaching. Now, I've never played hockey. I don't know coaching philosophies. I don't know how one coach's philosophies differ from another, especially considering that all of these coaches, whether you're looking at Ben Grew or anybody else, all are playing within the constraints of what the Lightning want them to do, right? So it boggles my mind a little bit when you think about the differences that we're seeing so far, you know, between this season Syracuse, which is young, last season Syracuse, which was also young, and the major difference being last season the team was coached by Ben Grew. This season the team is coached by Joe Bouchard. So since I can't speak to that specifically, I can't see, you know, the behind the curtain here with this. You know, do I understand why it seems like this team is connecting more and looks like they see each other better on the ice? No. Can I explain why the neutral zone is no longer an issue for this team like it was under Coach Ben? No, I don't know. I'm thrilled by it, but I can't, you know, I don't know why. But what I can say is that even just watching the way Coach Bouchard is allowing the team and the fans a little bit more access to the players as opposed to Coach Ben, it's a contrast. About, I don't know, I think it was last weekend. The Syracuse Crunch posted on their Twitter something that a lot of other teams do, but that the Crunch hasn't done, at least since 2016 when Coach Grew took over. It was the like post-locker room win pep talk celebration thing that a lot of teams do and some of them post, and it was fascinating to get that peek inside of the dressing room after a win and to see how the coach addresses his players and to see how the players celebrate each other. And it's not that I doubt that those things were happening under Coach Grew, because I assume that they were. I don't, but that's the thing though. I don't know if they were, because as fans, we never got that insider's view. So it was very interesting and very fun to have that peek into that celebration. One of the things that I always tout that's fantastic about the AHL is that it gives fans, you know, and mostly this is geared towards the younger fans, the children who have dreams of later playing in the NHL. But as an older fan without children, it's still pretty cool for me too. The AHL allows the fans, I like to think, more access to these future NHL stars and, let's be honest, previous NHL stars than the actual NHL does. In Syracuse in particular, the players park in the same areas that the fans do. The practices are open to the public. The organization does a lot of appearances and things that are free to attend. There's a lot of charity work that happens. Currently, the team is doing a thing where they're raising money for cancer research, and people who donate will be entered into a contest where they get to shave a player's head. Like, there's a lot more interactions in the American Hockey League with the players than in the NHL. But a lot of that is scripted access, right? You go up to an event, you say, hello, how are you? The players act polite. You talk a little bit about whatever, and then you walk away. To see these little glimpses into how the players interact with each other and interact with the coaching staff through those types of videos, like the one that the team posted last weekend, it's just one more piece that is going to draw your fan base in and allow them to connect with their team. So that is a big difference that I think fans are really going to enjoy seeing under Coach Bouchard, is a little bit more openness about the organization and what goes on. And I think that, to be honest with you, I could see where this is also going to help build community amongst the players and build more investment into the team from the fan side of things. So my thinking is that that will result in a team that is synced up a little bit more, that will continue to have chemistry and see each other well on the ice. Obviously, time will tell on this one, but I think that this is something good that Syracuse has going for it so far. And just from the fan perspective, it's exciting. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about, there's three of them that I've kind of picked out as what I think Syracuse is doing really well right now. They're getting scoring from up and down their roster. This was something I actually talked about in my last episode that I saw as a development that was very exciting. And I'm thrilled to be able to say 2 weeks later, I think it's been 2 weeks, that trend has continued. At the top of the scoring chart, you have Felix Robert, 8 games, 11 points. Robert has been on an absolute tear this season, and he is by far the most productive player on the roster right now, and clearly the biggest amount of firepower that Syracuse has at the moment. But the good news is that if you look up and down the roster, like say someone gets hurt in Tampa and they call up Robert, there are people who are ready to step in who have been scoring all along. So if we switch over to goals and if we start just looking at pure goal production, number two on the roster after Robert, Daniel Walcott, 8 games played, 5 goals, and then 1 assist. Walcott did really well last season for Syracuse. He actually had a career season last season. 67 games played, 13 goals, 19 assists, 32 points. He is definitely on track to beat that this season if his pace continues. So he will definitely be a fun player to watch. And, you know, as a reminder, he's on an AHL contract. So that's also good news. He can't go anywhere. Moving down a little bit, looking at goals scored. There are 2 players currently on Syracuse with 3 goals each, Lucas Edmonds and Cole Koepke. 4 players with 2 goals each, Fortier, Dumont, Usai, and Devontae Stevens. And then 8 players, as long as I can count correctly, with 1 goal each. So the goal scoring is being spread out amongst the different lines and the different pairings, which is fantastic. If we switch on over to assists, so those helpers, Gage Gonsalves leads the team so far with 7 assists. Mitchell Chafee, who is currently hurt, I believe, has 6 assists in 7 games. So hopefully whatever's going on with him will get fixed and he'll jump back into the roster. Robert, again, 3rd place in scoring. He has 5. Jack Thompson, 5 assists. Also, by the way, did anybody notice the shiny new A on Thompson's jersey Saturday night? Looks like Syracuse has its 2nd alternate captain. So congratulations to Thompson. Relatively young, I think, for someone to have an A, although, you know, looking, he's only really had 1 full season with Syracuse so far, but clearly the coaching staff had been withholding that 2nd A until they got to know the players a little bit better. They had been looking for that leader, and Jack Thompson is a defenseman to have 6 points on the season so far in 8 games. They're seeing something in him that they like. So he has that A. He's got those 6 points, 5 of them are assists. That's amazing. As we continue, you know, 2 players have 4 assists, 3 players have 3 assists, 6 players, 7? I can count. 7 players have 2 assists, a bunch of players have 1 assist. So we're seeing the scoring happen up and down Syracuse's roster. That is also really exciting because the secondary scoring, those players that are on like your 3rd and 4th line, those players that are on, you know, that are on your blue line, those were the players that weren't really being productive for Syracuse last season. And that was one of the reasons why the Crunch kept stumbling in the standings and really stumbled in the playoffs. You're always going to have your top 2 lines of forwards being your point getters. That's the reason for their entire existence on the top 2 lines. You have guys like Felix Robert and Gabriel Duma and Gage Gonsalves anchoring those lines. Like, there's a reason why they're there, because they score. Duh. But you need the rest of the roster to be chipping in, because every player goes through droughts where they're not scoring. And you can't expect five or six players to carry the weight of the team on their shoulders. That's not how you win consistently in hockey. You need to have your secondary scoring fired up, and you need to be getting support from everybody on the ice. That hasn't necessarily been happening. I mean, honestly, like, if we're being really honest with ourselves, that has been a difficulty from Syracuse coming back from the closures that the pandemic caused in 2020. Having a roster where everybody is able to pitch in is not something Syracuse has had in a couple of seasons. So if this secondary scoring continues to show up and continues to impress and do well, then this is, you know, this is going to be an exciting team to continue to watch. Right now, the games are a lot of fun. They're fast. They're quick. You can tell this team is enjoying playing with each other, and it's a lot of fun to see. So we have that going on right now. The third thing that is going right for Syracuse at the moment, hallelujah, y'all, it's their special teams. I don't know when we've been able to say this about a team. It's been a long time. But right now, both Syracuse's power play, when they are up a player because the other team has committed a penalty, and their penalty kill when Syracuse is down a player because they've committed a penalty, is either almost topping the whole league in the case of the penalty kill, topping the division in the case of both special team units, or topping the conference in the case of both special team units. Syracuse's power play currently has a 27% success rate. Now, granted, that doesn't sound like super high, but the leading power play in the league has a 38% success rate. The second highest power play unit in the league has a 30% success rate, which is not that much above 27%. So Syracuse's power play is really clicking right now, and it's fantastic to see. Again, Syracuse's power play has not been incredibly good in a couple of seasons. Like, it just hasn't been. It has not been good, but yet they're managing right now, and it's really, really good to see. Meanwhile, over on the penalty kill, Syracuse's 90.6% penalty kill is good for third in the entire league as far as penalty kill success goes. So that basically means that 90% of the time, almost 91%, because it's really 90.6, Syracuse's penalty kill, those players that are specially selected to go out there and prevent a goal from the other team when you're down a player or two because of penalties, is successful almost 91% of the time. That's really impressive. In fact, I mean, if you're looking at the North Division alone, the next team after Syracuse is Utica, whose penalty kill has an 83% success rate. So Syracuse's special teams are clicking. They're playing well together. They're seeing the ice well together. And they're helping their team win, which is what you want your special teams units to do. And it's really pretty exciting to watch. Hopefully those things continue. It definitely seems like whatever new plan the new group of coaches has brought into this organization, it's working. So, you know, it's really good to see. Now, is there anything that maybe isn't working well for Syracuse? I thought long and hard about this because honestly, it's too early to start freaking out about anything. Like, Syracuse is currently fourth place in the division, but, you know, they have all those games on in hand on the other teams. And it's like, it's too early to be thinking about any kind of you know, playoffs or what this might mean for playoffs. It's November. Like, it's too early to really be thinking like anything about what these positives mean for a team that still has until April to play. So conversely, and keeping that perspective in mind, it really is too early to start being overly concerned about any part of the team that perhaps looks a little worrisome. For those of you who watched Syracuse lose to Rochester Saturday night, or for those of you who watched Syracuse lose to Utica on October 27th, you might be concerned by the type of goals that were let in by the goalie that played those two games. But that's just it. Those two games were not the greatest for Hugo Elnefelt. I am sure that there were goals in those games that he would love to have back. And you have that tiny small sample size of games to hold up against his wins on October 14th and October 20th, one of which was a shootout, or not a shootout, I'm sorry, a shutout. So Elnefelt has never been a super consistent goalie. He's had stretches of brilliance. He's had stretches of struggles. This season was supposed to be a pretty big one for him because he was expected to be the number one netminder in Syracuse behind Matt Tompkins. Yes. Sorry, because he's up with the Lightning right now. His name has kind of been erased from my brain, but I'm fairly positive that's his name. And you know, and Tompkins himself was a relative unknown. So he was expected to sort of be that kind of steady veteran presence who would step in and, you know, whatever when Elnefelt needed a rest, and that's how that was going to go. Best laid plans. It's not how the season has turned out. Vavilevsky needed surgery. That messed with the goalie lineup. The Lightning obviously was not comfortable with Evan Fitzpatrick, who is the fifth goalie in the organization. He's currently in the ECHL because he is an ECHLer. The Lightning was not comfortable with an ECHLer backing up Elnefelt in the AHL. So they fixed it. They fixed it by bringing in Russian Wonder Kid from another organization. And that player, Kochetkov, I don't remember. I heard his name said at the game the other night, and I repeated it a couple times, and I still couldn't really tell you if I'm pronouncing it correctly. But anyways, he has won a lot for Syracuse. He has been very impressive in the games he has played for Syracuse so far. So you know, I can only imagine that it may be challenging to have what you thought was going to happen change. That might be the issue here with Alnefelt as to why he has been struggling a little bit in the most recent games that he has played. But again, he's only played four games. He's won two and he's lost two. This is such a small sample size that, to be honest, I even hesitated to bring it up. But I do know, just from what things that I am hearing, that there is already some concerns from the fan base about some of his play. Because when he is off, as most goalies. I mean, that sentence probably has been said about 75% of the goalies in Syracuse Crunch history. Goalies tend to fall into two camps. They can recover well, and that camp tends to be a small percentage of goalies, especially in the AHL, where many of them, Alnefelt included, are still learning and honing their craft. And then you have the rest of the goalies, where if they have an off night, they are off. And unless your offense can keep up with what your goalie is doing or not doing, you're going to lose games. And, you know, for once, I don't honestly think Syracuse's defense can be blamed. Syracuse's defense has kept shot totals down. They're doing their job better than I think we have seen them do it in a long time. And I'll be quite frank with you. I am the first person to admit that I was potentially wrong about this defensive core because they were one of the ones I was most worried about in all of this. So when you have a defense that's doing their job, when you have an offense that's scoring, but again, this guy has played four games so far this season. And he's looked great in two of them, and he's looked not so great in two of them. I am perfectly willing to continue to give him more chances and seeing where this goes, especially since Wonder Kid from Carolina probably won't be with the Crunch that much longer since Vavilevsky is expected to be making his return in early December. So what does Syracuse have to do to keep this momentum going as it heads into its next couple of weeks? Well, first of all, we have two transactions that we need to discuss. The first was an addition to the team via a conditioning stint. Now, NHL teams can assign players to the minors that have been hurt and are coming back from an injury or that just haven't played in a little while and they want them to get some playing time. And they call these assignments conditioning stints. These are temporary assignments, and they have to be temporary. They can only be, I think it's like for 14 days or something, so it doesn't even go by games played. It literally goes by like days spent with the AHL team. So defenseman Hayden Fleury was assigned to Syracuse, and he did suit up Saturday night for the Crunch. Fleury hasn't played in the American Hockey League since 2018-19. When he played with the Charlotte Checkers. And that was only for 28 games. And I assume he was up in the NHL for the rest of that, although to be honest, I don't really know. But he's a good quality defenseman. So Syracuse will definitely be happy to make use of him over the, you know, next couple of games, however long he is with Syracuse. The other transaction is that forward Walteri Marella, and forgive me if I pronounced that wrong, but it was, first of all, it's me. Second of all, I actually tried to find video or something of a recording that said this guy's name, and I couldn't find it. So that's going to be my best shot at this. He has been with the Lightning this season because of the injuries that have happened. He was expected to be with Syracuse. In fact, for those of you who watched my time when my interview that I did with Crunch owner Howard Dolgan with the 315 Hockey Report, he actually had Morella as a part of Syracuse. And at the time he was with the Lightning, so there really wasn't much to say there. He has now been assigned to Syracuse. Now, you know that I love it when releases need to say something when these transactions happen. Morella's release says he's played in 10 games with the Lightning this season, averaging 10.54 in ice time. So because of, 10 minutes out of the full 60 that a hockey game is played is not a lot of ice time. And really, that's really all they have to say about this guy so far as his North American career goes. And that's okay. He was really only up with the Lightning because they had some injuries. Morella came to the organization from the Finnish Elite League, and he had 6 25-plus point seasons in 10 years and was generally known over in that league as a threat in the offensive zone. So the plan, I think, has always been that he's going to get a lot of ice time in Syracuse. He's going to grow. He's going to adjust to the North American game more so than he can playing 10 minutes of, you know, on the ice with the Lightning, and get used to the organization and do all of that stuff. So this was always the plan for this guy. And I think he would have been in Syracuse sooner had the Lightning not had injuries. The other thing this means is that Barry Boulay, who has been playing on the first line with the Lightning and has been doing well, it's almost as if many of us have been saying for a long time that all he needed was an actual chance and not just time on the third and fourth line when he couldn't really be effective to do well. Looks like he's sticking with the Lightning at least for now. So congratulations to him. You know, thankfully, it doesn't seem like Syracuse is missing his power too much, yet too much. We'll see what happens as the season goes on, but it will be interesting to see how the coaching staff kind of folds Morella into everything, where they'll start him, you know, what line he'll slot in on, especially knowing that the chemistry in Syracuse right now really seems to be working well. Now, depending on what's going on with Chafee Mitchell, who I mentioned in the last segment, did not play Saturday night. Having Morella assigned to Syracuse may help cushion whatever's going on with that particular player too. So it will be interesting to see in the coming games what's going on there. Speaking of upcoming games, what does Syracuse have on its slate for the next couple of weeks? On Wednesday, Syracuse will be in Belleville, 7 p.m. start. Friday, for their military appreciation night, Syracuse will welcome the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins to the Upstate Medical University Arena at the Onondaga County War Memorial. And yes, that is actually the full name. I just generally refuse to use it because I have to breathe in between when using it in a sentence, and it's just too long. So Wilkes-Barre comes into town. Syracuse will have specialty jerseys. Excellent. It'll be a fun night for all, I am sure. The following day, November 11th, Syracuse goes to Wilkes-Barre. So we have a home and home series. Those are always great fun, especially when events happen in the first game that then carry over to the second game. So nice. November 14th, which is a Tuesday, Syracuse has the always special, always exciting 10:30 a.m. school day game at Bridgeport. I was always jealous of these organizations that got to have school day games because as a teacher, I always wanted to be able to bring my classes to crunch games. And then I thought about my children running feral around the War Memorial and kind of realized that I was probably better off not taking them to a hockey game. So those are always loud and screechy and fun. My apologies to anyone who will be listening along at home to that game. You might want to not, because the children are loud and screechy. Friday, November 17th, Hartford comes into town. And then Saturday, November 18th, Syracuse goes to Hartford. Lots of home and home series lately. The team had one kind of against Rochester. It was separated by a couple of days, but they played in Rochester on Wednesday and then had Rochester come into town on Saturday. And then now it's, you know, Wilkes-Barre and then Hartford. So it's, you know, interesting that the team has a lot of these kind of back-to-back games going on. But that will pretty much take us through until the next episode of this podcast, which will come out right before Thanksgiving. So then we'll be almost all the way through the month of November and into December. It is so exciting to be here with you all and not have to be talking about when the Ben Grew effect will start happening. You know, I adored the job that Coach Ben did for the first couple of seasons with this team. The lack of actual playoff success for Syracuse after 2017 was a little suspect, but the amount of players and regular season success, so the amount of players who found success, the amount of development that happened in those years, and the amount of regular season success that Syracuse would eventually have as the seasons went on was exciting. But this was also, especially the past couple of years, the moments when we would be sitting here going, okay, when is the Ben Grew effect going to kick in? Because the Ben Grew effect usually kicks in end of November, middle of December. Then all of a sudden the team gets on the same page, buys into his program and starts playing well and everything is okay right up until the playoffs where Syracuse falls apart. Like it or not, that has been the pattern for the past couple of seasons. So far, the team that we have had performing in front of us has not been following that pattern. And I have to admit, it's been really fun to watch. I'm excited to see where this takes us. I can't wait to catch up with you all again in a couple of weeks. Until then, take care of each other and enjoy what we have left of fall before, you know, we really head into the fun weather season of winter and just taken on a new meaning now that I'm so far away from Syracuse. But that's my problem, not yours. I will talk to you again in 2 weeks. I think that will do it for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. I crave interactions and feedback, so please feel free to get in touch with me over Twitter. And I'm still calling it Twitter because I refuse to call it the new name. My personal Twitter is at Allovimo, as always, Allovimo. Keep taking care of each other out there in Crunchland, and I will see you next time.